My name is Ryan Luke Winslade, and I am a PK and middle child. I know what it's like to be a misfit, an oddball, a weirdo, but I'm okay with that. If you're like me, you are most certainly welcome. Even if you're not, you'll hopefully enjoy yourself here on Pastor's Middle Kid anyway. We'll talk about stuff and look at things a little differently. All right, let's get started. Welcome to episode 63 of Pastor's Middle Kid. My name is Ryan Luke, and it is great to have you listening. In case you haven't realized, it has been a few weeks since I put out an episode. That is all my fault, and I'm really sorry for that. First of all, I could say that I was really busy, but that wasn't necessarily true. I was procrastinating just a little bit. Then I got sick, and I had a cold, so nobody could understand what I was saying in person, let alone over Skype or even talking into a microphone, so I wasn't able to record for another week. Then I just started filming a short film with the creative department at YWAM Newcastle, and you'll hear a little bit about that in my talk with Jeremy, but that threw me out for a few more days as well. But I was finally able to grab some time where I wasn't filming and Jeremy was awake in Lithuania, and we had this great conversation. I found it to be quite thought-provoking, and it relates to national, international, and interracial, intercultural reconciliation. A bunch of different applications for what we talk about today, I think. I'm sure that you'll get something out of it. And like I said, we also talk about a short film that I'm getting into and have an update from Jeremy and his work in Lithuania. I'm not going to keep you any longer than this in the introduction due to this being a longer episode. Remember to check out the Blogisodes, that is a blog to accompany each of these episodes, at pastorsmiddlekid.wordpress.com, or hit us up on Facebook and you will find it there. Without any further ado, this is my conversation with Jeremy Barry Randall. Oh yeah! Jeremy, thank you so much for coming back onto PMK. It's been a few weeks since I've had you. Actually, it's been a few weeks since I've had any episodes at all. Mm-hmm. But I think everyone would agree with me when I say that there is no one else that I or the world in general would rather have to break the PMK drought than Jeremy Barry Randall.
Yay!
Listeners, you may know Jeremy from a couple of episodes that I've had him on. I think I've had him on 3 episodes now, and here we are on the 4th, and this is actually kind of a follow-up episode to a few weeks ago when I had episode 62 of PMK. We hinted at something that we were going to go a little bit further into, and that was the topic of generational ties and generational sins and the reconciliation and recompense that come about as a result of just being further down the line in time from your predecessors.
Yeah.
And seeing how that relates nationally as well as person to person. So we'll get into that in a second. But right before we do, I'm going to update everyone, including Jeremy, here and now, right here. it's an exclusive update on YWAM Newcastle's forthcoming short film, which I was the writer of.
Whoa, sweet.
Yeah, it's a privilege that I've never had before, and I had a vision for this story. and through refining it with Scott Berry, who I've had on PMK before and who is somewhat of a mentor of mine, both spiritually and in filmmaking, we refined it into something that I believe is going to be quite amazing. It's a comedy, and Jeremy, you'll be interested to know this. It is starring the one and only Michael Cook.
Whoa, that's a good start. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he is playing a character by the name of Randall.
Classic.
Some people
Randall.
May think that I'm, in a way, giving you a nod through this character, but I choose to take a different stance. You see, when I was coming up with the name for this character, I needed to think of a name of somebody that is just an average Joe kind of person, but with a name that allows for a little bit of quirkiness. And I believe that the Randall encapsulates who this character is in the fullest. Now this short film, we have a rough estimate of it going to be between 6 and 10 minutes, somewhere roughly in there. It is a comedy, and it is the story of Randall, who is an unlucky man. Things happen to him that I think we can all relate to, such as, I don't know, maybe stepping in something on your way to work, or burning a toast or something. Just basic problems that everybody faces. And now it's set in 2 days. The first day, Randall reacts poorly to these scenarios that happen to him. And then there's a confrontation with somewhat of a love interest who basically tells him to stop being such a grumbler and to get his act together and to not make mountains out of molehills, basically. And he wakes up the next day, and even though things continue to happen badly to him, similar things to the day before, he reacts in a more positive way. And in my opinion, in a funnier way. So it's his transformation from a grumbler and complainer to somewhat of an optimist and somebody that looks for the silver lining. Now, I wrote the film, and I am the boom operator on set. So I hold the microphone and my arms go dead, and that's kind of my job. And then in the post-production phase, I'm going to be the composer. So I am quite involved in this thing.
But you're enjoying the process?
I am loving the process. It's such a good, satisfying thing to go from being the person that came up with the original concept for a movie to now being on set and seeing Scott Berry, who's the director of photography, and Jono Scott, who is the director, seeing how they are taking my vision and making it their own, and how that is being translated to the screen. I think it's an amazing process. And the fact that I get to be boom operator and have dead arms for the sake of seeing this dream become a reality, I think it's amazing.
How did you cast it?
Jono and Scott, they use their connections. Jono has done a lot of musical theatre stuff in Newcastle, so he knows some people. He knew the leading lady through that. And Scott knew some people through church that had been involved in their church drama productions. Now, we were actually really stuck on the lead character, and we couldn't find someone to be Randall. So we were asking as many people as we could. Scott was talking to all these people from church and other connections. And Jono was talking to people, but we couldn't find anybody that really fit. And then Scott put out a Facebook post. Michael was overseas in Detroit, Michigan, visiting an outreach team on a pastoral visit. And he put a comment up and said, "I'm interested. Talk to me when I get back." So then Scott and he had a bit of a talk. They read through the script, and Michael was sold. And he's never had any acting experience.
Nope.
But
he's just a good bloke.
Yeah, and but on top of that, he is a natural. He is awesome. The character that we wanted was a character that was a little bit awkward, but lovable. Somebody that
that's Michael. Went,
that is Michael. Yeah, but you wouldn't know that he's never acted before from the way that he's been
awesome.
He's been acting, so it's been really cool. Yes, and the funny thing about filming, and this is something that I didn't really realize until I was involved in the process for this, was that you shoot things out of order depending on availability of cast and location. And sometimes it's in a really ridiculous order. So starting with the romantic, or the, one of the date scenes, and when he'd never met this person before, and he was recounting events that happened during the day that we hadn't filmed yet.
Yeah.
Was a little bit weird. But now as he's going through and acting them, it's like he's filling in the gaps for himself. And the footage looks awesome. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it comes together. It's all out of order, but it gets put together in the editing process. And Scott is going to do an amazing job at that. So looking forward to that, and I get to compose, and I'm super psyched for that. Yes, so that is a very long-winded explanation and update of this short film, but
a good winded.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I hope so. I hope people have actually listened to all of that. In the coming weeks, there'll be updates on how that is going, and it will most likely be ready and released in early August. So there's a couple months of the post-production phase of editing and composition and other things. Also working around Scott's holidays. He's going to his wife's hometown in Michigan for a month. So he's not going to be working on it during that time, but I will be chipping away at the music. So really excited. And we have some nice cameos from our family here at YWAM Newcastle.
Nice.
Bunch of different familiar faces as extras and even as secondary characters.
So is there any Matty Coates in this one?
There's no Matty Coates, unfortunately. Oh, no. He's on outreach, but he would have been prime as one of the secondary characters. Yeah. Everything else is coming together, and so it's definitely something that I am excited for. And that is, in a way, a bit of a life update as well as a ministry update. Now,
But you also got something big just recently, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. Another life update is that my fiance and I were we did some fundraising. We believed that God wanted us to buy a car, so we ended up raising $5,000. And over this last couple of weeks, we were quite intently searching in car dealerships as well as online and newspapers and stuff. And we eventually found a car on Gumtree, which for the American listeners is like Craigslist. And the person that put it up there had $5,000 on it. And that is not what we wanted, because we wanted to make sure we had enough for insurance and rego and everything like that. So we were aiming to not spend any more than $3,500. And Fiona put in a bid weeks ago on Gumtree, just typed in, we'll pay $2,700 for it. And this person didn't get back to us for ages, but apparently there was no interest in it, because after a couple of weeks, they sent us a message and said, we won't go any lower than $3,500. We went, oh, that actually sounds quite nice. So we went and checked it out a couple of times and took in a friend from church who knows a bit more about cars than we do. And it is a 2005 Kia Cerato. And
nice.
I bought it on Sunday. So I've had it for almost a week, and it is amazing. It's been kept in really good condition. It just needs a service, which shouldn't cost too much, and we have some money budgeted for that. And everything is covered, and the Lord is amazing. And to say that I bought a car, I paid for it in cash, which was weird, taking in $50 notes in a Ziploc bag. it was a little bit sketchy. Now, because of the withdrawal limits on ATMs, I could only take out a maximum of $2,000 at a time. So I took it out in two halves, $1,750 each time. But yep. each time I did that, I would get $35, $50 notes out of the ATM and stuff them in my wallet. My wallet would be as fat as a, I don't know, overweight.
Fat thing.
Something. And it'd be bulging out of my pocket and I would feel so endangered. I would feel at risk. Walking around Mayfield, even just walking to my car, what if I got mugged in those 15 steps? I would lose almost $2,000. And then when we handed it over, I felt such a sense of relief because not only was I free of this burden of cash, but I was also the proud owner of a new car. Or a used car, but the new owner of a car.
Yeah.
So very exciting. That's so good. Very exciting. Yep. I want to ask you, Jeremy, before we jump into what we promised the listeners, what has been going on the last few weeks for you? Any exciting things?
Yeah. So I was on the other side of the country to play this family festival. So I got to play with one of my favorite drummers in the country and one of my favorite singers. And it was just like really fun. Mm-hmm. And during that, I just got to walk around and think and dream and start like dreaming for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Latvia for some regional meetings because we want to have YWAM do something celebratory next year because it's the 100-year anniversary for all the Baltic nations' independences for next year,
mm-hmm.
as well as YWAM Latvia's 25th year. So we were just trying to ask the Lord what he was leading us in. Mm-hmm. And we got some pretty cool stuff. But then after like a month or two of looking for jobs and visas to stay in the country, I have decided to withdraw to Australia for a couple of months.
Mm. Okay.
Possibly six. Just to come back and reconnect with everyone and look into the visas I can get from Australia to here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has been so stressful because I don't like the idea of leaving so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like the idea of, well, I like the idea of going back to Australia, but I know that getting there is going to be really stressful.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't slept so good. And then on the weekend, have you ever gone on a night adventure, like being woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning without being told and then taken on some weird competition?
No. In a way, it sounds amazing, but also it sounds terrible.
I know, right? It was so good, but then I've just been exhausted since. And it was a fun game. Like, there were all these puzzles and all these creepy people with masks in the dark and all this fire.
Wow.
But other than that, it was fun.
Yes.
So, yes, I am excited and tired, but I'm good to go.
Sweet. Well, when are you thinking of coming back to Australia?
Earliest, I want to fly out the middle of June. Latest has to be the middle of July.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. So a lot of stuff to prepare in the coming weeks.
Yep. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of international living, unfortunately, isn't it? The whole visa process. You can't just live somewhere. You have to jump through a whole bunch of hoops.
I know, and I hate those hoops.
Oh my goodness.
Although the hoops aren't that bad.
Yeah. I think as a single, they're not that bad. Now, when it comes to, getting married and the different visas and costs involved for all those types of things, that's just another step. Another step further. So my fiance and I, we're needing to look into the spouse visa for Australia, which is going to cost in excess of $6,000. And it is. Yeah. And that's on top of, you know, getting started as a married couple. So actually establishing ourselves at home, and working jobs and buying a house. I mean, not buying a house, but, you know, getting an apartment or something.
Yeah, you gotta buy a house.
I mean, that would be pretty spectacular. Nevertheless, it is a headache for sure. So
definitely.
I understand where you were coming from. And you, I think you'll be able to cope with it quite well. And look, you're a flexible kind of guy. And I know that I know the way that you tend to do things in jumping from country to country, even though it can be stressful. I think you're pretty joyful as you do it. And I think that's that's the key to it, is finding the good side of everything. Not just seeing it as a pain in the butt, but going through with it because it's an opportunity.
Definitely. It's a good opportunity too.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll be fun.
All right. So let's...
So see you soon.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. I mean, if you come to Newcastle, which I'm sure is potentially on the agenda for you.
Oh, it's definitely on the agenda.
Live podcasts in person.
Yes.
I mean, the whole nature of a podcast is that it isn't live, but podcasts in person. We will be live.
In person.
Yeah. Woo. All right. Well, let's get into this topic, which has been brooding in the minds and hearts of all of our listeners over the last few weeks, and that is
so much brooding
generational stuff. So remind us all what it was that was going through your mind that you were mulling over regarding generational and national repercussions and all that type of thing, and then we'll get into some form of discussion.
Okay. So it originally started back in Australia, because when you talk to some missions theoretical people,
mm-hmm.
they talk about this spirit of rejection over Australia, which was because, one, the whites were rejected from England and put there,
mm-hmm.
but then also the whites have rejected the indigenous off their land.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understood that was a thing, and I understood what the repercussions of that was in people's lives,
mm-hmm.
but I just didn't click with how do we defeat it, or how do we meet it on and deal with it.
Yeah.
And then when I moved here, and I've recently been reading some histories and some books, and Vilnius, the city I live in,
mm-hmm.
has been the site of every European conflict in the last, like, 150 years.
Wow.
Because it was on the edge of the Polish Empire. It was on the edge of the Russian Empire.
Mm-hmm.
It was on the edge of the Soviet Empire, I suppose you could call it.
Yeah.
It's in the midst of North, South, East, West Europe. Like, this is where the center of Europe is officially. And so it has all of this conflict in its history,
mm-hmm.
and especially the Soviet Union, because it was this experiment in controlling people and trying to make the perfect human or the perfect nation.
Yeah.
And in that whole attempt, they kind of screwed a lot of people over.
Yeah.
And so when you look into the stats of this place, like, alcoholism is high here, the suicide rate is one of the highest in the world. Mm. There's a lot of orphans here. There's a lot of people leaving the land because they can find better jobs other places.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And so then I started thinking about, is it a one-time thing? Like, do we just find a Jewish person and ask for forgiveness, and that Jewish person says, yeah, you're forgiven on behalf of all Jews, and then that part of the history of this land is dealt with?
Mm.
But that doesn't seem to be the thing, because even in Australia, we had a prime minister who had said sorry on behalf of the government to the indigenous people.
Yeah.
But I just don't know what that did to the rest of the country, or if it did anything at all.
Mm.
So that's what brought me to ask the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is an interesting one, and I'm sure everybody, wherever they are in the world, can think of a situation that that applies to them in this regard. And definitely a prominent one for myself as an Aussie as well is the same. It's the relationship between the convicts and free settlers and the indigenous people. And this is something that I guess in a way I've been avoiding addressing, because I just have no clue. I don't know how to really do my part in the whole thing. I think I get caught up in the size of the problem, the size of the hurt and the wrong that was done, And in a way, I guess I check out, I disengage because I'm overwhelmed by not feeling like I can actually make a difference. I'm just a drop in the ocean. And if I do what I can do, then that doesn't guarantee the resolution or the reconciliation. And I have a history of being a little bit more afraid of conflict, or at least more likely to avoid it if I can. And not necessarily sweep things under the rug, but try my best to pass off the responsibility to somebody that I feel has greater authority or greater influence that can actually do something about it. Trying to get out of it
and
myself.
I have had similar thoughts, like, I didn't kill anyone, so why is it my responsibility? And I'm not racist, so why is it my responsibility? And I think that works as an extent, but it's also linked with how I see history. Like, what do I label? Like, and what you say about sweeping things under the rug, like, if collectively the Australian people label our history with the Indigenous people as, oh, whatever, it wasn't that bad, then that labels history for them as a lie, because for them it was terrible, and for them they lost family and they lost their heritage and they lost their culture because we just decided that it wasn't worth celebrating or keeping alive. And so I wonder if it has stuff to do with that too, like just how we collectively label things.
And along those lines, I agree with you. I think there is a the way that we respond can lead to greater misunderstanding or even severing of ties that potentially could have been mended. I think that with this whole the response that we can have as Aussies to Indigenous people, I think first of all, the acknowledging that it was actually bad is super important, and that goes beyond our situation here, but political situations and differences right across the board of culture, race, whatever, all this stuff is, first of all, the way to achieve reconciliation is to recognize that there was some wrong committed, there was some misunderstanding, something that needs to be mended, something that needs to be reconciled is the first step, and that is something that I try to do. But beyond that, I must admit I'm not very active in seeking reconciliation, and I think it's because I get overwhelmed with the gravity of the problem itself. And for some people it is enough to say, I'm sorry that I and my people in the past have done this to you, would you forgive me on behalf of your people? In some cases that is enough, but it's mostly person to person. Some people or some families need to have those encounters and those moments of reconciliation in a personal kind of way. And I think we've seen with the political apology to the Indigenous people in Australia, we've seen that it doesn't, if no further action is taken beyond that, then it easily slips back into this apathetic attitude towards the problem. And then that causes feelings, hurt feelings and other things to fester, or even just to continue to be different and to get further and further apart. And that's something that I believe we've seen in Australia since that public apology, is that white people have not really done much more. Some people have, but that's usually on a personal level. As the government, which is predominantly white, it has not done too much So he hasn't done heaps to reconcile the problem beyond that.
Yeah.
And the even just thinking about Australian history, going back through the 1900s, there was all those different attitudes that the government had towards it. There was assimilation, there was integration, there was, you know, all these things, reconciliation as the final one, which is trying to bring us back together. And in most cases, we've dropped the ball.
Yep.
And we've seen people just with broad brushstrokes here. We've seen people in many countries, particularly those settled by white people, by the British. We've seen that there has been some kind of recompense or trying to pay back the wrong that they did by giving things.
Yep.
And a lot of the time that has been in the form of money or governmental support if they go through education, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
I think the education one is terrific because then that gives them a chance to be their own person.
Yeah.
I think the handouts and other things and giving people their own land, I think that is good as well. But we've seen in Australia, but I know from talking to a lot of my friends who are Canadian, when they talk about the different Native American reserves and things right across Canada and even in some parts of the States as well, I've talked to some of my American friends about this. They become these places where these people who feel like they're being given things, not given opportunities.
Yeah.
They just go there and they do whatever the heck they want, and then they go back to the government and they come back to their reserve, and a lot of them are alcoholics as a result of feeling like they are worthless because they've been given basic things that people are supposed to work for. So it's been a dehumanizing attempt at reconciliation.
Yeah.
In the physical sense of things. So we've seen that. What are your thoughts on that type of thing, in the physical recompense of repaying these wrongs?
Yeah, and I think it also comes to that thing of like pain crafts the future. So if you've been told all your life that you're not worth anything, or your race, like what you were born into, isn't worth as much as this other race, even if no one says that, but by the fruits of their lives, it just comes out like that. Then that's part of the reconciliation, to deal with that pain. So it's not necessarily let's throw money at the pain, let's throw opportunity at the pain, but have we really like labeled the history as it actually was, and then seen how to get that pain back to normal? And that whole idea of redemption or justice isn't just eye for an eye. Like, you don't just take someone's arm because they took your arm. You want to get them back to how they were before they lost their arm, even though sometimes that's impossible. But like, that's your aim, to get it just as it was or better. And so what does it take to guide and to heal and to comfort a race that for so long the Australian government thought was this and the Australian people were like this, to them belonging and them being a part of the Australian society? And like, because the whole world has histories of people taking land from other people. Like, where I am right now was a tribal society for so long, and like this king would take over and this tribal chief would take over and this tribal chief. So it's not like you can't own land because people can take it off you. But now the Australian landmass is now labelled Australia. And so the Australian nation needs to come to a place where, if you're Australian, you get to belong in Australia and you get to own Australia and you get to influence Australia, as opposed to just being like, well, the Aboriginals can just have their part of the land and they can just lead that part of the land. Like, I'm curious what it would be like if you gave, and now I'm confusing my brain so much because I want to go in heaps of different directions, but so let's say everyone that lives in Australia agrees that Australia exists and Australia is okay to exist, and so we just have to agree to be Australian, but does every citizen of Australia have the same influence, or are they given the ability to choose to have the same influence? Because, like, a politician would have more influence than me because I don't even live there right now, and a politician is seen and heard and has worked hard to get to that place. But then if an Aboriginal kid decided that it wanted to be an Australian politician so that he could have influence, can every Aboriginal child choose that? Or because of historical behavior towards the Aboriginal people, are they less likely to get there than me as a white dude? Does that make sense? And so, like, dealing with the pain, not necessarily dealing with physical things, so that the next generation at least is able to function as highly as everyone else.
Yeah, I understand that. And you could draw a biblical parallel here to the, obviously, the people of Israel when they were taken into captivity, and they were being held captive by the Babylonians, and it was bad. Yet there were people that from the nation of Israel, like Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that rose to positions of authority and influence. Yet those are outside of the kings that were during that time, and Jeremiah and a couple of the other prophets. Apart from those guys, you don't hear about anyone. Yet God didn't change his he didn't change his command, but rather he changed his direction in the redemption process of Israel when he said, buy property and make this land your own while you are here. This is important. So even though there was a longing for Zion and there was a desire to go home and to reestablish their nation as it was, as an independent nation, God didn't want them to dwell on the past or to be stuck on the future. He wanted them to actually take heart in the present and make a difference now. And that I think is the problem that so many of us have, whether we are white or whether we are Aboriginal. We are stuck in this strange limbo where we aren't sure whether or not we don't really know the way to make it right now. Because we look back to, I guess, the 1700s, and can you imagine how, I can't imagine how devastating it would have been to be an Aboriginal in the days of the early settlers, and even going right up through all the terrible racism that's happened through the decades and the centuries. We can look back to that and see that they had their way of life, which worked perfectly with this land. And we had ours, which didn't. So we tried to change things in this land, and they haven't really worked. And so then we could think, well, we can just give them this land and they can live there, or these reserves or whatever it is, and they can do what they want. But the fact is, we are so far removed from that that natural interaction between man and the land with them, that they wouldn't be able to sustain it in that kind of way now. Because not only has their culture been not only has it diminished and has it been I guess squashed out of them and tried to be assimilated into ours, but also the fact that the free settlers and the convicts did so much to damage and change the way that this land interacts with the people,
yeah,
that has sabotaged any or a lot of potential for future returning to that kind of interaction. So looking back, we don't have the solution because we can't just give it to them because it's not going to work anymore. Yet looking forward, as a white person, I don't know the pain of viewing Australia Day as Invasion Day. I don't know that pain.
Yeah.
But I wish I did, and I wish I actually knew the other side of that story because I want to care. And it isn't that I don't care, it's just that I haven't really been given or taken the opportunity to know that pain. I guess how we as Australians have a responsibility to know that pain. So looking forward, I'm sure there is some kind of desire for... No, I'm certain there is desire for each of these oppressed cultures and nations to have their culture living strongly and I guess seen as human and valuable and equal.
Yeah.
And so I know that there is a push to get Indigenous languages back into schools and to try and revive this culture. And I think that is beautiful. And God created all these different cultures way back when. And if he creates something, then it is good. And we know that from the account of creation. He sees what he creates as good. And whether he's creating one man or whether he's creating a culture, he knows that it is very good. And I guess that is the approach that we are supposed to take, that each of these cultures has value and is unique and is beautiful. Yet at the same time, within our culture, we need to be holding things against who we know God to be and seeing what parts of our culture are redeemed by God and what parts need to be redeemed by God. And each culture has that. They need to hold things up against the character of God. But I think it is beautiful to have people that are so powerfully chasing after this dream of having this culture revitalized and thriving once more. So there is that healthy push towards the future, I'm sure, but a longing where you refuse to make a difference here and now, I think, is where we get caught.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Sorry for talking so much then.
No. I like it. What do you think the negatives are of that? Of, like, when the Aboriginals are like, we don't want to call it, we don't want to do Australia Day this day because it's our invasion day. Mm-hmm. And you get one side of the argument who's like, oh, no, we can't change it because if we change that, then they'll want us to change everything.
Mm.
And then you have the other side who's like, why wouldn't we change it? Like, this is an important thing to change for them.
Mm.
What is the negative behind changing things that the Aboriginal people might want changed? Like, what do you think that fear is?
I think the fear is that it will be a pendulum swing.
Okay.
And that we as white people, or we as the general populace of Australia, or pick your conflict, whatever it is, that the majority will become the minority and that we will be oppressed. And I'm sure it's actually a valid concern. Yet I think being defensive and reluctant to change anything for fear that somewhere way down the line things will swing in the other direction, I think it's not an honoring position to take. It's not an honoring value of the other side. And I know that as an opinionated person, I know how it feels to be in an argument or a discussion with someone and to refuse to see their point of view.
Yep.
Because I'm afraid that I will look weak or that I will be wrong. I'm afraid of how they will see me. And I think this is just a massive bloated version of the same thing.
Okay.
We are afraid that we will be seen as evil and that we will have to change absolutely everything to accommodate for people. And I think in a way that is what political correctness is doing. It's trying to write some of these cultural norms, trying to quote unquote correct them. Some things I believe are too much, yet the actual acknowledging of a problem and doing what we can to hear out the other side,
yep,
is really, really important. And I believe that is the most honoring thing we can do for people, is to listen.
Yep.
To be quick to listen, slow to anger, and slow to speak, slow to become angry. Got that mixed around. But I think listening is the most important thing. And when you are actually open to hearing what the other person has to say and not just waiting for them to finish speaking, then that is when changes in mentality, changes in mindset, that is when they occur. That is when reconciliation begins to actually happen. When you can not only hear the words that someone is saying, but when you can empathize with the other person.
Okay. So with that example of Invasion Day, mm-hmm, let's say the Australian government, on behalf of the people of Australia, decided, yes, the 26th of January is not a great day to celebrate our Australianness. Let's change it to May 8th because that's funny. And we're a funny people. Mm-hmm. And we change it. And we honour, we use that day to honour both the Indigenous people of Australia as well as our shared history and culture for the last 200 so years.
Mm.
What are the people fearing us changing that, thinking is going to be the next step that the Aboriginals will ask for?
That is a really good question. That is not a trajectory that I have spent much time thinking down.
Me neither, and I don't know if they have either. But I think it's just this weird, irrational fear of, if we give them this specific simple thing that makes total sense to do, they're gonna ask for our whole lives. And I'm just like, what?
Well, we see that in the book of Exodus, don't we, with Pharaoh is afraid that the Hebrew people will rise up and overthrow them because there are that many of them. So then he enslaves them.
Yep.
And then further down the line, the slavery gets worse and worse and worse until there's this mass exodus because God himself intervened.
Yeah.
And it was the fear that Pharaoh had of the Hebrew people, of the change that they could bring to their culture, to their national paradigm, even their religion, all this stuff. It was the fear of that change that led him to being so oppressive. And then God's response to that was, that's wrong. You need to let these people go. Now, I'm not trying to say that that is necessarily a fantastic parallel to what we are seeing in Australia and what other people are seeing in different nations. But I think the fear of change and the fear of a snowball effect happening,
yep,
is what keeps positive change from actually happening.
Yeah, agreed.
So what do you think is something that that Aussies can do to create some kind of reconciliation and positive way forward, or even in the case of Vilnius with all these different problems that have happened, all these different clashes over the over history? What is something that you think would be a positive step forward that could maybe start us on a trajectory that could lead to reconciliation and potentially celebration of each other further down the line.
I think Aboriginal history and culture should be more of our school curriculum, because I just don't remember learning much.
Yeah.
Because I think that will then give us more of an empathy, more of a knowledge of our longer history. Because sometimes it feels like our history started in the 1700s.
Yeah.
Except then we also link it up with British history and blah-de-blah-de.
Yeah.
And also because Australia as a whole isn't, I don't know the stats, but it's not just white people. Mm-hmm. We have such a multicultural populace that have shared longer histories, or non-shares longer histories. Mm-hmm. And so if we all learnt about the Aboriginal history more than just the white people history, that would give us a good empathy, I think.
Yeah.
Here, what we've been started thinking about here is the relationship with spiritual stuff, like how has this affected it spiritually, how has it affected the people, and because you've had some interesting religious belief systems here over the years, we've started thinking about how much prayer and intercession and worship we're doing. And so this weekend we've got this big intercession prayer team coming in from Greater Europe to just ask God what he's doing and what he needs us to be doing for him in that regard. But then I also think it's the same, like a lot of what the Soviets did here, a lot of what the Germans did here to the Jews was historically rubbed out, like erased, like they tried to keep it on the down low as much as possible so no one knew what they were actually doing and how dark the history was here. And because I'm a history nerd and because I have been here a year to just learn the history almost, I know a lot about this city that a lot of my friends have no idea of. And I'm wondering the same. I have more empathy for more people of this world and more people in the land and more of our of the parents here that went through the Soviet Union. Because even during Easter, I went to my housemate's parents' house and I just started asking Soviet Union questions, and they just started telling these stories through tears because they hadn't talked about them so much for a long time, and some of them their children had never heard. And so I think it's it's definitely a combination of like praying and seeing what God's doing and what we have to do actions towards, but also just knowing our story more so that we can label the bad things bad and deal with them and then celebrate the good things. Because some people, it's so funny how often this happens. People are like, why isn't Australian here? Like, why aren't you back in your like sun-soaked nation? And I'm like, because I love it here. Like, I love the people, I love the place, I love the stories here. And they're just like, why? This place is so dark and so wet and I just don't like it. And I think people do like it here, but they have this like international self-image of it being not a good place, of it being a place that no one knows and everyone's forgotten about. So why would people come here? Because it sucks. Whereas I think, if they did the whole deal with the bad things and label them bad things, get rid of them, and then celebrate the good things, this place would be so much better.
Yeah, and I think the believing labels that either others have given us or that we have given ourselves often leads to cultural attitudes that become snares and they cripple us. And so in Australia we have things like tall poppy syndrome, where it's bad to be better than other people, because then you're kind of, I don't know, they lop off the top the tall poppy because it's all about mateship, everyone's equal, like that type of thing. And so in school it's bad to be smart at something, you get picked on for being a nerd, which is the dumbest thing ever.
It really is.
Because if you think about it, nerds should rule the school. But anyway, I just don't know how I can necessarily make a change beyond myself. And I think that is the problem at the root of all this, is that even I find myself thinking, and I'm sure other people have as well, I find myself thinking that even if I change something about myself to be different to this cultural norm or this national identity or something like that, even if I change something about myself, that doesn't guarantee that everything is going to change. And I think I get caught up on that because I'm afraid that I'll be the only person that's actually started the race.
Yeah.
And then I'll get cut down. And I think that's just, again, another example of tall poppy syndrome. I'm afraid of making a change and being something different and even going after reconciliation with people because that isn't something that is normal.
Yeah.
Everyone is afraid of sticking out. And I think if we had more people that weren't, maybe that could lead to some positive cultural reform.
Yep.
And positive change.
Definitely. I love positive change, yo. That's
my jam. Positive change is awesome. It really is. And I'm discovering that more and more as I'm getting closer to actually marrying an American. I didn't grow up in America. I've only really become acquainted with American culture since 2013.
Yeah.
So the last 4 years, I've been discovering this whole side of the world that I've only ever seen through a movie screen. And I'm beginning to understand that there are things in the American culture that are amazing.
Yep.
And that we should celebrate and we should strive to be like. Yet at the same time, being an Aussie and being exposed to this new culture, I'm realizing the things in our culture that are beautiful. And I'm sure you're going through the same thing.
Yep.
Where you recognize parts of the Australian culture that are amazing and other countries need to be more like you. Or more like your country.
Yeah.
Yet you're discovering things about Lithuania and all these other countries that you're going to that you feel like we need to adopt part of. Yep. And I think that is the multifaceted, many-sided character of God that we are experiencing in all these cultures. That we're seeing aspects of God's character, these gems in each of these cultures that need to not be squandered and destroyed because of the differences, but the gems in each of them need to be picked out and brought together.
Yep.
And I just don't, it's a big thing. It's a very tall order. And it's hard to make a change if you're the only one, you know?
Yep, but it's impossible. Possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jeremy, I feel like we're getting to the end of this, but let's briefly hit on something that, I mean, not hit on something, but we'll briefly talk about something that you mentioned right before we started recording, and that is when we discuss things with people that we disagree with, we often use language or references that they don't understand, and it makes them feel even more on the outside and even more defensive and opposed to our point of view.
That is a good summary.
Thank you. What was it that got you thinking about this, and what are your thoughts on it? And then I'll share mine and then we'll wrap it up.
So quickly, I have this new friend here who's British, and he's more of a politics nerd than me, so every time we anywhere near each other, we just start arguing about politics.
Hmm.
And because he is quite good at arguing both sides and I'm getting okay at arguing both sides, mm-hmm. our conversations are really good, because even though I disagree with most of what he's saying, I agree with how he's reporting on them.
Hmm.
And I realized that a lot, especially in politics and theology and stuff like that, we argue from the side of I'm the in crowd and this person I'm talking to is the out crowd.
Mm.
And I have to convince them that they should join my team by arguing well, using the language that I know what all of this means.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think Jesus was so good at using out crowd language. Like he would meet someone who didn't know who he was,
yeah,
and he would either like heal them, which was a tangible language that people could feel and see that something changed,
mm-hmm,
or he would use parables of their own life experience. Like if they were a fisherman, they would use fishing stories or farming stories or blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I think in political discussion, if we started using the common ground, so if you're talking about universal healthcare, most people want universal healthcare because they want people to be able to access healthcare in the emergent times. They don't just want to be slackers, like they don't want to just be lazy.
Yeah.
Whereas the other side would argue that you know that you won't be healthy all the time, so why won't you plan for that by putting money away and getting health, like private health insurance?
Mm.
And I think if we start from the common agreement that we all will be sick at some stage and we need doctors, what's the best way for us to get doctors? And then argue from that, depending on where in the world you find yourselves, as opposed to just being like, you're an idiot and I hate you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that conflict, I think that type of conflict, that I'm right, you're wrong, definitely came to a head with the US election last year. And there was a lot of discussion on different podcasts that I listened to, one of which is Don't Feed the Trolls, which is a great podcast, where they were talking about these differing opinions, and they would have people on the podcast that they disagreed with, not so they could have an argument, but so they could actually listen to the other side of the story and then make an educated decision because of it. It's like, I don't know, it's like saying, it's like maybe you have one particular way to make a cake, okay? So many different types of cakes. But in your mind, a cake is when you have, it's vanilla flavored, and you use this much flour, this much sugar, and all the rest of it. But somebody else is thinking, no, a cake is, I don't know, like if it's a Central European cake, it might be something that's more based on crust and it kind of resembles a pie or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's different. Yet if you say you make a cake wrong, then that's dumb. But if you say you're using the wrong ingredients, you should be using this or you should be using more of this, then that in a way is making you even closed off to them. And not even acknowledging that they make a cake differently to you. You're saying they make a cake wrong. And that I believe, leads to a whole lot of division and an extreme lack of empathy, which I'm beginning to understand is quite important when it comes to loving your neighbor as you love yourself. But bringing it back to what you said about how people feel like they're in the out crowd as opposed to the in crowd and refusing to maybe meet in the middle and compromise a little bit. I think we're afraid of compromise as a Western culture.
Yeah.
I was seeing recently somebody that I know is a younger person, and they were talking to an older person, and they were talking about all these things that interest them and all that. And they weren't talking about it flippantly. They were talking about it in a way that they thought the other person would be interested in. Yet this older person I know didn't understand half of what they were talking about, yet they got the gist of it. Now, there were some words as I was overhearing this conversation that I thought they probably should have used a different word so that the older person would have been able to actually understand them. Yet this, it was a genuine conversation, and I know that it was the goal was to have some kind of mutual understanding, and the older person actually wanted to hear about it. So taking that a step further, if a young person talks to an old person Or if you as an English speaker talk to somebody who is not an English as a first language speaker, and you're using words or phrases that do not translate into other languages or other generations, then there is going to be either miscommunication or a breakdown altogether in communication. And the person will not necessarily desire to interact with you potentially ever again as a result of seeing you as somebody that dishonored them by making them feel left out or making them feel out of place. And of course we see that in Christianity with other religions. And of course we see that within Christianity in denominations. And that one just infuriates me even more because it's many parts of the one body. And if we get caught up on the things that we disagree with, but we refuse to connect on and celebrate the fundamentals that we share as a faith, then I think we're really missing out on a relationship that should be explored and should be celebrated. So, yeah, that's it.
Boom!
Awesome. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for joining me once again from Vilnius. I'm glad to hear that your travels went well and that you got to play music with people from different countries that you think are awesome.
Oh, it was so good.
That is so awesome, man. And I will probably see if I can find time to chat with you again before you leave Lithuania and before you come back to Australia. And then once you're back here, I'm sure we'll talk again. But to everybody listening, this has been Pastor's Middle Kid. I hope you found it interesting and thought-provoking. I'm doing my best to try and form this podcast into one that is more of a commentary on life and faith and also enjoying ourselves along the way. And this took a bit of a different turn to what we had planned or expected, but I think it was a relevant one. So if you didn't agree with something that either of us said, then let us know. We would love to hear your perspective on it. If you would go to facebook.com/pastorsmiddlekid, you'll find this podcast, or you can search it, pastorsmiddlekid@gmail.com, for any feedback or suggestions. And this has been episode 63, and hopefully you'll tune in next time. Uru.
Uru. Oh, yeah.